And away we go here. It is Friday, January 22nd, 2021. You're tuned into the Pastor's Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. This program can be heard live every Friday here on WWGH Radio, 11:10 a.m. until 12 p.m. It repeats on Sunday morning, 8:10 a.m. until 9 a.m. And then again on Wednesday from 3:10 p.m. until 4 p.m. Also, it's available on the website, WWGH1071.com. Go there and you can hear past episodes, I believe, dating back to the beginning of this show, nearly 3 years ago now. I think the three-year anniversary comes up in April, beginning of April. Pastor Steve Whitaker is with us here. Pastor, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I want to welcome everyone. I did pick up a couple more sponsors, and that would be Jeff's Bicycle Shop in Prospect and also Mid-Ohio Insurance Solutions, so I did want to mention those. It's great to be here. I want to start out this morning like we did last week. I want to open with prayer because I think that's important, and if anyone throughout the show has anything they would like to pray about or needs prayer, feel free to call in here at 740-383-9940. So let's go to prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for this day, for your many blessings. Lord, I thank you for watching over us and those that you take care of. Lord, I ask that you guide those in our government today, that you would let all things be done as they should. And Lord, just lead us and guide us and direct us. Thank you for your love and grace. Amen. Well, what a week it's been. It has been, you know, things change so much anymore. I had a group of kids. I still do Pizza with Pastor on during one night a month. And, actually, it's two nights a month. The second Tuesday of the month and the third Thursday. That's kind of hard to remember. But we had it with a kid with the teenagers last night. And I was talking about how rapidly things change. And I never would have, I told them, you never would have dreamed in February of last year. We had this booming economy. Places were begging for employees and people actually calling me at my office saying, hey, do you have anybody? And then in a month's time, everything just, it shows you how quickly everything can drastically change. And it does change. But I think that one thing interesting about Americans, and I think it's a credit due to, one, the hardships of living in the very early part, infancy of our country. And the other thing, bringing so many different cultures together, Americans have had a resiliency that is, I think, unmatched anywhere else, because we have so many different thoughts, so many different people in the way they do things. And I think that we're rolling with the punches now. The next four Sundays I'll be preaching on at Community Christian Fellowship. My messages will be on depression and anxiety because it's everywhere. And I don't think there's anyone not being affected by it right now. But with that being said, we don't have to be that way. I'm not saying it's not going to affect you. Every year, every time we have an election, there's always one group of people that is going to be very depressed for a while and another group of people that are going to be elated for a while. But depression, I think, goes far deeper than that. And it goes into our nursing homes, and I'll get into that in a minute. And it goes into people just not knowing. I think one of the hardest things on us is things that we just don't know. The fear that it puts in front of us. You know, when you have a relationship with somebody that can sense there's something wrong, but you just don't know. Or your job being up in the air, not knowing if the company's going to close or what. All of those kind of things, just not knowing is very, very hard. Am I going to be able to keep my house? Am I going to be able to keep my job? When are my kids going to go back to school? What are they doing while I'm at work? Because now they're at home a couple extra days a week. All those things are difficult. But I want to shift gears a little bit this morning, Scott, and I'm going to take about a 30-second breather from talking and tell me what your thoughts are on how things are right now as far as, are they getting better?
You know, I would think that in general, I think things are getting better because I think human beings, no matter what the issue, are adaptable. Now, clearly, nobody wants to stay this way forever, but I think in the beginning, when you talk about things changing, in a moment. The world changed in March. Well, United States. Let's start here. It changed in March of 2020, and it changed in about a week. Beginning of the week, this bad thing's here. We need to close down some things. By the end of the week, school was gone and sporting events were being canceled and it never stopped. And this is where we are. But I think humans are adaptable. Do we like the death? No. Do we like the illness? No. But I think this is our reality now. You know, it's weird, this is my final note on this, but this is why I think they're better. It's interesting because when they take somebody to prison, it's total anxiety. It's total, people cry. The first night they're there, it's awful, but they adapt. They end up living. It becomes their routine.
Yeah, it does.
That's what human beings do. We adapt.
Yeah. And that's a kind of a good analogy of adaption. I know that God intends us to trust him, and in trusting him, it allows us to ride the storm out better. I was, and I want to encourage you out there to find copies of these books that Scott, you may be aware of, but are you aware of any of the Foxfire books?
Oh, yeah.
The Foxfire books are a series. There was a Foxfire Center in Appalachia, and there were a lot of, they would have a lot of college kids and even summer intern high school kids come in and help them research that whole region of the Appalachian Mountains and, you know, all the way up at their highest point, going through Virginia and then going all the way down into Georgia, and how those people lived and because they had an unbelievable resiliency. And they would one book may cover the food that they had and how they prepared it. Another may be medicine. Another maybe. Well, I picked up a friend of mine, Frank Robinson, brought in a book a while back. It's Foxfire 7, and it's pretty thick, and it's a heavy read. Well, it's a heavy read as far as much as there, but it's a light read and enjoyment. And what they did was they went into the region, and they went to different pastors and spiritual leaders throughout and interviewed them. Now, this was done in particular book was done. It was compiled between about 1976 and 1979. And the people they interviewed, most of them were past 60 at that time. So they were interviewing people. Some of them were born before 1900 and some in the first 20 years of 1900. So they had a lot different perspective. But it was very interesting when they talked about the hardships and what people expected. But was amazing, and I think it's a neat thing. It's something we don't always think about with the church, and maybe the church sometimes need to think about this, is that was their lifeline. Their church that they went to was their lifeline. And it's where people got together, they knew each other, and they helped each other, and they made sure that everybody got through the winter. They made sure that everybody ate. And it was just that lifeline. And I really would hope that people would understand, and not all churches are, but they still can be that today. And I don't mean that in the sense of just having a food pantry or just having a clothing closet. Those are some basic needs that usually when those people down there needed things, they made their clothes. A neat story that you've probably heard of, and this was back in the probably the 30s and 40s in our country. Moms would make girls' dresses out of feed sacks, flour sacks and feed sacks. So one of the major feed companies started printing all of their feed sacks and flowers and polka dots for that purpose. So the moms would, you know, that's a thoughtful thing for a company to do. I mean, look, if you got to wear a feed sack dress, young lady, at least wear ones that doesn't say oats across the front of it, you know. And we did things like that, and those people did things like that. And another thing that was very interesting to me was, I was reading one chapter, and it was the two different chapters were Black Baptist ladies, okay, and they talked about their church, and then there was also a couple chapters where some Methodists talked, and they talked about how they literally shared a church, and when they had revivals, they'd share the pulpit. They would say, you know, the only real difference, they said, between us was the Methodists, the association told them who to put in the pulpit, and the Baptists chose their own. And then most of the free Methodists back then, they would sprinkle and baptize by immersion. It was your choice. And, of course, the Baptists always did baptize by immersion. But they talked about how important and centered that life was with the church life, and how important even things like how important baptisms were. I got a kick out of it. And they all told the same story, and it didn't matter whether they were Lutherans, Baptists, whatever. They would tell the same story of how they handled hardships. And the one that got me was the baptism, because they would baptize sometimes anywhere between 5 and 15, 20 people at a time. Well, they'd go down to the river, down to a lake, or down to a pond. They didn't slow down in the wintertime. And there were they talked about how they would go out and have some guys go out ahead of them and break the big ice chunks out so they'd have a pool that they could dunk somebody in. And they would stand out there, and it was just a common thing. And nobody complained. And I laugh at that, because I know at our church now, I'm constantly checking that water temperature if we're going to have a baptism to make some sure somebody doesn't chatter too much. And we've changed so much as people. And we just, unbelievably. But I think we are a resilient people. I have a great concern. Our seniors are very depressed. I've talked to healthcare professionals that we've had these discussions about how they, how much their depression is affecting them, especially if they already have dementia type issues. And I got to thinking about what can we do about that? First of all, honestly, there's probably not a lot we can do about that. One thing we can do is send a card, send a letter, something cheerful that they can get through the mail. Another thing is, and I'd encourage people to do this, and by no means do I want to guilt anyone in saying this, but if you have an elderly person, and if your work schedule would allow it, and you don't already have a house full and at your peak, consider bringing them home. Consider bringing them home. If you think you can take care of them, I would consider bringing them home. Because even though they're in the nursing home, they have to let them go. If you decide if you're their power of attorney, you can. And I would encourage that. And I think it would give them peace in the end of a time that's very difficult. And some of them may even perk up and get better. I don't know. But it's got to be, being shut in your house is a very depressed thing. In the last week, I've talked to more people that have told me about just the unbelievable depression everybody's feeling in some form or another. And I've decided that I'm not going that way. It's easy to do. It's easy to sulk into. But you know what? There's a lot of things, for all the change we've had, there's a lot of things that haven't changed. I can still open my Bible and read it. I can still talk to my friends. I can still go out and tell people about our wonderful God and what he has in store for them. If they would just understand and accept him beyond their physical needs at the moment. And we're free to worship. We're still free to do that. Most churches, if they're not open, they're live streaming, and you can still get family together and watch that, your family, and talk about it. And look, we need to make a good thing bad. I mean, the other way around, a bad thing good. We know that all this stuff's bad. It's hard. But at the same time, look at some of the things that have been done. You could not buy a piece of pressure-treated exterior lumber last summer to save your life anywhere. It's because people were building decks at home, and people were building sheds. It amazes me, even at Rural King, they still have chickens for sale. Baby chicks, this time of year, they've never stopped putting them out, because so many people have said, you know what, I think I'll raise some chickens. And it's just amazing. People have really been focusing back at home, spending more time with family. Some people have told me, I've never spent this much time around the dinner table with family as we have in the last year. And those are good things. And I don't think that we have to let COVID-19 control us. What do you think?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, since the beginning of this, precaution, yeah, that's changed. I'm doing things I normally would not have done before, like wear a mask. And, you know, I do have hand sanitizer available, and if I'm aware that somebody does have it. I don't go around them. So those are things I wouldn't have done before. But outside of that, it really hasn't changed all that much. You know, I still drive, still go to the grocery store, still go to the department store when somebody's birthday's coming up. You might act a little different in those places, and there might be a few things that are different about those places, but by and large, you know, not a whole lot.
Well, I'll tell you that, yeah, I agree with that. The one thing that's hard for me is I enjoy my hospital visits. I enjoy encouraging people, and we're at a place where we can't really do that. But there are plenty of shut-ins at home still. And I talked to a fellow yesterday that came in to see me, a friend that serves in the church with me. And he and his wife go to, not Sam's Club, what's the other one? Box store, Costco.
Oh, yeah.
They go to Costco, you know, once every couple
of weeks. Ted, I remember so well when...
And he has started buying those chickens that are already cooked, that are the roasting chickens. He'll buy 4 or 5 of those, and then on their way home, they'll stop and deliver them to people that are shut in right now. And he was telling me of one incident where their fellow just stood there staring at this thing like it just thrilled him to no end. And those are simple things we can do and should be doing. You know, the Bible encourages us to take care of widows and orphans. It tells us that that's a basic thing that all of us should be doing, is making sure that widows and orphans don't do without. And there's so many kids today that are struggling because of home situations and the parents being taken out of that. And this was before COVID. And there's really a real need for us to have compassion for other people. I think that if we could live the life we're meant to live and follow God's plan in our lives and produce the love in our lives that only He can give us, I think that a lot of these things that we fight about on the exterior would take care of themselves. You understand what I mean? I think that I encourage people. I don't want people to vote Republican or Democrat. I want them to vote their conscience and wherever that's going to lie at, wherever that's going to fall down on. And, you know, I've been hearing this term since I was involved in local politics as a young teenager many years ago, of voting for the lesser of two evils. And that's been around forever. And maybe in our mind we do have to vote for the lesser of two evils, but the point is, wherever your conscience lies in those, whoever you think is going to be either more promising to what you think would be right, or maybe there's someone that you feel would be really detrimental, vote that way. And that's the way that the voting should go. We've divided ourselves into camps in this country, when what we really should be doing is every one of us should be trying to do what's right regardless. And I think it'll be a whole different world. It's really interesting, Scott, in the early part of this pandemic, one of the things that I talked about, and I probably mentioned it on this show, is that people were coming together and opening doors for people. They were being polite. They were, I mean, more than I'd seen in a long time. There was a genuine concern out there, and all of a lot of the stereotypes were kind of going away, and people were really concerned, and I was seeing a lot more compassion everywhere. But as time's gone on, and this level of people being depressed, because it just goes on and on, has grown, I'm seeing people more argumentative. I'm seeing people that get angry easier, people that, and it does have a long-term effect on people. I can see, and it's a good example now to see, when there's people that live in complete poverty, whether it's a socioeconomic situation, whether it's a mental situation, whatever has brought that about, addiction, whatever it is, when people live in that situation, they're depressed. There's nothing to look forward to every day. And that's something we need to think about in this country. We've tried and tried. I don't believe that we can just laud everybody with everything, thinking they'll rise up and then get excited and be whole again. I think that so we have to somehow deal with the internal struggles with people, what's on the inside. And of course, you know, the outside's important too. The material is important. But I think that we have to look at how can we help people internally? What can we, let's get those kids out there and get them in Sunday school. Get them in whatever other organizations people had. I know there's organizations after school at most of the schools that have different positive organizations afterwards. You know, the what's the one called that my mind just went blank. Isn't that horrible? Anyway, there the After School Bible Club. That's a huge one. And you know, those are times where people don't get paid. They're total volunteers to take their time and give those kids something to encourage them. And I think parents need to think about that and be looking in those areas. I read an interesting article the other day that I actually shared with our young people at Pizza with the Pastor last night and got their feedback on it. And it talked about how in the last 50, 60 years, we have, instead of having that close home relationship with our family, because the family is what centers our country. I mean, the family is a design that we see in Scripture, that we're all of, you learn your self-worth. It's what keeps you together. It's the glue that holds you together. But we have relinquished our role of a lot of our own personal mentoring to coaches, to teachers, to people in different areas that do the different things that we get involved in, so to speak. And we spend so much money buying equipment and buying practices and buying all these different things when we're paying people in a way to do a job that we ourselves should be doing. And then when our kids get in trouble, you know, we're going to blame the coach. We're going to blame the school teacher. We're going to blame the school system. As somebody dropped the ball with my kid. And the truth is we need to look at home first. I dropped the ball with my kid. You know, that's where it has to start. And certainly with the way things have been, not being able to do a lot of things, parents have had more of that opportunity. And, you know, I just pray they're doing that, that they are spending that time around the dinner table, getting more. You know, it's really funny, for the first time, a lot of parents have truly found out how hard it is to get their students to do their work. Because, you know, they didn't see it before. Oh, I don't have any homework tonight, Mom. Yep, I got it done in class, or those kind of things. And now that they see how the kids have to do it, and, you know, the parents may find out that they haven't done anything in the last 2 weeks. And so that's kind of been a reality check, so to speak.
Well, you know, I remember in the beginning of this, I thought two things were interesting. When it first started, there had not been any stimulus money, and it did kind of come out of the blue within this week, and it was an illness, and school did impact people, because there were people who were still working in offices at that point who didn't have any daycare, who sent their kids to school, and it was a weird time. So I think people were more caring and sympathetic, because they were, okay, we don't want you to get sick, we want you to have your kids taken care of, you know, we don't want you to go low on money. And then as time went on, you know, some stimulus money did come, and then we saw people buying televisions with the stimulus money. And,
oh, did we ever.
And then we saw,
just like a trash day.
That's right, that's all you have to do. And then we saw people who we were worried about getting sick going to Cedar Point and going to the zoo, and that's your choice if you want to do it. But I think the person who is more, you know, worried and concerned, your concern drops a little bit because when you're confronted with the facts, you take your facts and you make your decision. And if I know you're making that decision, then I have to say, well, okay, best of luck, and not it's less to feel the empathy that we felt in the beginning is a little different at that point.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And there's been so many different thoughts and people thinking this work and that doesn't work. And so many people that are just adamant about the mask situation that is unhealthy for you. And other people are saying, oh no, this is the only thing that's saving lives. And both camps are firmly planted. And the point is that we have to figure out a way to respect each other without going there where it becomes a battle. I mean, even if I feel the mask makes no sense at all, I need to respect your right to wear it and your right to expect me not to be right up in your face. I mean, that's only fair, right? If you know that I don't wear one, you know, I should be expected to do what I do. But at the same time, don't start an argument because I'm not wearing it. You see what I mean?
Well, you know what I think happened? Because to be honest with you, this whole mask thing is, people are going to look back at this as very funny for just the reason you just said. Nobody is making you wear a mask in your home. Nobody's making you wear a mask outside. Nobody is going to arrest you if you don't have a mask on.
No, they won't.
But the problem is businesses have always been allowed to make their own rules. Mm-hmm. And if they say you can't come in without one, you can't. Well, guess what? You also can't come into business without pants on.
You never complained about
right?
that. No. Shirt and shoes.
Shirt and shoes. But you can take your pants and shirt and shoes off at home. Business, you can't walk in a store and pick up a piece of meat and walk out the door without paying for it. There are always rules, and maybe sometimes there are rules you don't agree with, but there have always been rules. That's what private business is. So this mask one, that one I don't get. That's weird to me because I understand what drove it, but it was those businesses' decision to make that decision, and some businesses didn't make it.
Now, I will tell you, if I go to the store with my wife and we're walking around for maybe an hour, the masks really starts bothering me. I don't think that you should be breathing your own CO2 back in or carbon dioxide back in that much. But the point is, how can we overcome that? So what we do is if you sit down at home and you make a list of what you need where you're not just casually shopping and you go in and get what you need and leave – then you can do that. It's not going to bother you. It's not going to affect you. I think there needs to be mass break areas. Some people, it really does bother them to wear them. It truly does. And so I don't know. I think that it's I just wish that we would all respect each other a little more in the whole process.
Well, you know what's interesting? When I was in high school and college and working my first jobs, you know, it's hard to explain this to younger people today, but all restaurants had smoking sections. And
me too.
Yeah.
And that was just till recently. It hadn't been that long ago.
Last 15 years.
Yeah.
So you had, okay, but if today you tried to go into a restaurant and smoke, it ain't going to happen.
Nope.
Now, that was a rule. Now, I don't remember. There was some outcry, mostly from bars, because they felt that was a hand-in-hand.
And they got through that, didn't they?
They did. But, you know, I don't know how that is different than this, except I think this will be temporary. I don't know how that was different than the mask thing. Because you can still smoke at home. Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to stop you if you want to. It's probably not the best thing to do for your health, but you can buy them.
I think we should all just be expected to use some common sense in everything that we do. I know that at our church, you know, we've made two services instead of one, so people could have that distance. Our first service is probably the most sparse, and we encourage kids to come to the second service so they can have their children church time. So there's in our first service, if people want to have their distance, it's no problem. We have masks there. We have, but it's a thing where if somebody, you know, doesn't want to wear a mask, you know, just respect the wishes of somebody that does. And, you know, I've been getting questions from different pastors like, do you require people to wear a mask during the whole service? Because I know they're getting questions and they're getting, it's just something they have to deal with individually and try to accommodate people and understand their needs. And I would encourage people, if you're really afraid to come to church, and you really want to be there like you say you do, at least watch the service online.
Well, and the bottom line of this mask thing, the truth of it is that if you're in a store and you're having trouble breathing and you pull that below your nose, nobody's going to say anything to you. If you pulled it up, nobody's going to say anything to you while you're shopping. If you don't wear it in the store, 90% of the stores aren't going to say anything to you because it's not a law. It never has been. Now, they can throw you out for loitering if they have decided to do that because you're breaking their rule. But highly unlikely they're going to do it. I've never seen somebody say, get out, you don't have a mask on.
No, I haven't personally either, but I'm sure that it happens. I've heard of that happening.
But I have seen people walking around without them. So I know at some point they pulled them off, or some point they walked in without them.
Well, I think wearing the mask outdoors is just, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, when you're outside by yourself and you're wearing, what are you protecting yourself from? Fresh air?
Well, and that's what I think in your house. I think, and you could catch it in your house if you had somebody in there who was.
Yeah, but you're all breathing the same air at that point. Within a house, the amount of time that you inhale and exhale, circulating that air in that house only takes a little bit. Depends on the amount of people in the house. It's kind of like on the school bus. The kids on the school bus wearing a mask. When it's wintertime and the window's got to be up and they're running that heater in the bus, those kids in about 5 minutes' time are all breathing each other's air.
Well, and you know, this is the problem, and I saw it firsthand, and this is the problem that we get sidetracked sometimes with strange issues like the mask issue, and that to me is not the main issue, just something we just talked about. Back in November, right before Thanksgiving, I knew of two people over the age of 60 who lived with somebody who was in their early 30s. Mm-hmm. And this has been going on for a few years. And the people who were over 60, one is completely retired, so they weren't leaving the house very much at all. And the other, because of age, was working from home. Mm-hmm. This is how they were going to stay safe. The 30-year-old did not. He worked outside of the home. He got it. He was not feeling good. He got COVID. Well, guess what? They both did too. And they had not been leaving the house at all. Well, they got it because he brought it in.
Right.
But what do you do? So if you're the 30-year-old and that's your home too, and you start to feel sick, do you get a hotel room? I mean, what do you do?
I don't know. And the thing is, this virus is really odd. I've got I know a couple that he just got over COVID, and she never got it, and they sleep side by side. And, you know, it's so odd. It's, you know, there's people that in one house, I know of one family, the mom got it really, really bad, and no one else in the family got it. And, I mean, they were a close, physical close people. They touched and hugged and carried babies around, and nobody got it. I mean, they were all actually tested. Because at one point they were looking for antibodies for mom because she was really bad. And this is way back in the beginning. So they were all tested, thinking they just had a silent case of it. They all came back negative. And I don't know what to think. I think we should be as clean as possible. We should wash our hands. Stay out of people's face. That's a good idea. If you feel the mask is safe, that's fine. If you want to spray 99% kill air freshener every once in a while, that's fine. But remember, we got to keep our immune system up, and we can't let this totally affect our daily lives, because what's the point of making it through COVID when you lose everything else around you, and because you've just totally become a hermit? I know people that lived at home with no one else, and they were so isolated, and they got it. And people think the only place they could have got it was someone dropping off groceries or them getting mail. Where did it come from? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because the older population who is still at home that cannot live independently, which, you know, thank goodness we have people who will come into people's homes and do stuff for them and in some cases dress them and help them in the bathtub and things of that nature, didn't used to think much of it. But now, you know, that has become a danger for those older folks.
It has.
Because they could be we look at the nursing home, and it's a horrible situation, but the reason we're not supposed to see those people is because we're limiting contact. But it is getting in the nursing home, and the only way a viral infection could do that is through one of the people who is working there. So, you know, that's... What do
one
you do?
One thing I truly know and believe, and not everyone's going to agree with me, but I know that the Bible tells us that there's a day that's decided for our birth, and there's a day that's going to be the day you die, and nothing can change that. So with that being said, you don't run out in front of a truck and say, I bet today's not my day. I don't mean that. But what I'm saying is that let's live our lives with proper precautions, whatever you think is deemed necessary in your mind, and respecting other people. But let's not throw our life away in the process. So many things don't make sense. You know, when they want to come down on churches for meeting, but you see a Walmart full of people. What's this all about? You understand what I mean? When there's, because you do see people in stores. I had a guy, you know, it really did make me angry. Even if there wasn't COVID, it would have made me a little angry at the moment. He literally coughed right in my face about a foot away in a store a couple weeks ago. I mean, just right in my face. I mean, felt the heat off his cough. And I thought, boy, that was rude. But, you know, that's going to happen. Just a gamble that you're going to have to take. But just don't leave your life behind being scared. It's not going to do you or anyone else any good. Enjoy life to its fullest. Try to do the things you're allowed to do. I think that some of the things that have really hurt is like a lot of places that had like senior dinners and meals that people would go to have stopped those. Those people, that's a lifeline for those people. You know, so what are you going to do? I choose, because I don't want to die of COVID, I'm going to go ahead and die of a depression and anxiety. I don't think so. I think we need to, as much as possible, let ourselves live our lives and do each and every day, and not worry so much about it. Too many people get it that thought they never would. And what a horrible thing if you've not gone around your family, if you've been estranged from people, and because you want to protect yourself, and then you get it anyway. And, you know, that can truly happen.
You know, but we're still allowed to make our own. And I think that's it. You know, nobody is going to slap any handcuffs on you for doing anything you do. So, do
yeah,
it.
That's what I'm saying, Scott. Just go do it. Go do what
do,
you want to
do. What you want to
live life. Look, if you're going to get COVID, you're going to have a better chance of surviving it if you go into it feeling great and with a good attitude than somebody that's been scared to death, hiding under a rock, depressed. You get any kind of sickness then, it knocks your socks off, because we know that depression and anxiety lower our immune system. And so enjoy yourself.
Well, and then I also know there are some people who choose, who would like to be very active. They're still in charge of themselves. They're still living independently, and they choose to stay home. Matter of fact, I know a lady, very well-known lady in this community. She turns 98 and still living independently. She turns 98, I think, beginning of February, and her choice is to not go out of the house at this point in her life. And her family now is trying to get people to mail birthday cards to them, and then they'll give them to her. Mm-hmm. And that's how she's going to celebrate her 98th birthday. But she doesn't want to go to the grocery store. She could. She was still, I think she still drives at this point. But she doesn't want to. That's her choice.
And if that's her choice, she's probably not depressed over it.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Right.
She's chose, this is what I want to do. And if people, you know, call you on the phone, that's a pick-me-up that's unbelievable. A friend of mine, a lady in the church, just posted how wonderful it was. One of her patients brought in a brand-new little coffee cup that was gave her this morning just out of the blue. And, you know, it just cheered her up and made her day. We don't have to do huge things to cheer people up.
No, no, and you know something? It's interesting. This whole idea of the COVID, because I saw it firsthand over the holiday, because somebody I know who was elderly got it, and when they realized that she probably wasn't going to make it from this illness, they did call the family, and they did let, and she had been isolated from them for a long time. And they said, this is what's going on. We don't think she's going to make it. And they were allowed to bring her home. And she did go home.
Wonderful. And they're doing more and more of that. I've seen that.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. You know, another thing that we can do, change your environment around a little bit. Redecorate the house. Move furniture. Do something to get you out of the funk that you've been stuck in. My daughter, Heather, came in on Monday and completely helped me clean out and clear out my office. I took four boxes, cardboard, big cardboard boxes, home of personal items that were in my office at the church, and that really didn't need to be there. And then, you know, she redid some things and opened the area up. Man, I'll tell you what, it boosted my mood about 30%. And I walk in my office, I feel like, you know, it just feels better. And the environment's cleaner. My stuff's not all over the place. We actually went through all my files and organized them, so I know to go to this file for this, and I don't have to say, where did I stick that thing, you know? And it makes a difference. But those are some simple things we can do. Start attending a church. If you're really afraid to go into the church, hey, look, we're on Facebook under Community Christian Fellowship. Look it up on Sunday morning, and at 11 o'clock every week, you're going to see the service start. You know, if you don't want to have all the beginning of the service stuff, wait till 11:15 and the message will be there. But it's something to get you out of where you are. And I've been very encouraged lately by some of the people in the church that have talked to me about the desire to get out and do more and reach people. And, you know, there's things you can do. For instance, this year for Christmas caroling, you know, our kids met at the church and they sat on a wagon around the edges of a wagon, and they drove the they drove the tractor through town Christmas caroling. And people came to their doors and they looked, and it wasn't some huge gathering, but it was a way to still do those things. And this year, we couldn't do Bible school in town because we weren't going to be able to bring all the kids together. So we made at-home activity packs and distributed them all over the town to the people with kids so that they could at home have activities and things they could do. Some involved cooking and eating things, some involved all kinds of different things. But you can still do those things, positive things, without and weather the storm.
Well, creativity always rains out.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think we're going to get through this. I look forward to it. I'm not one of those, you know, now I'm hearing about this other strain that's real fast and real hard. You know, we're going to hear a lot of things. But I encourage people to do something. Check more than one source. Read several sources. Come to your own conclusion. Don't let a talking head give you the opinion on everything that you have. Look, when you want something on the internet, if you want to buy a new watch or clothes or so, you know how to get there and find it. So if you want to know what's going on with anything, whether it's medical or anything, get on there and don't just read one source. Keep looking, and you'll come to a conclusion. But it's real easy for us to sit back and be complacent and then complain a lot, and I don't think that's going to help anyone.
No, complaining never fixed anything, and this is what I've said all along, no matter what the issue is that people are arguing about. I don't know that complaining about it really changes it. You can complain all day long.
Doesn't change it.
You can argue all day long. I don't think it's really going to change the issue. It is the way it is.
Here's something interesting, Scott, if people will think about this. Sometimes the very thing that people are afraid is going to be taken away from them by laws or whatever that case may be, they're not doing anyway. Think about that. You know, oh, what if this, what if this, what if that? Well, you're not doing those things anyway now, so why would it really matter to you? And the thing is, if we take, there's so many things that we can still do as Americans, things that haven't been stepped on. Get out there and encourage and do those things. We had to move Pizza with Pastor to the church because it was going to be pretty tight in the dining room of the pizza place with all those kids. And we still could have done it. But, you know, at the church, they can really spread out in the fellowship room. And we had a great time. So, you know, we do the same thing on Sunday. So it's nice to be able to do something. Don't just sit there with that TV on. And I know that the news is important, but look at different sources. Turn that TV off. Don't let it just keep replaying in your mind over and over again. What? My wife and I, last week, Shirley and I watched two really good Westerns on Saturday. Old, good Westerns. And we had a great time. And people say, oh, I wouldn't watch what? Have you watched one? Or anything else, whatever other kind of movie might be fun to watch. Enjoy something that's not constantly raising your stress level.
Well, I don't know why people do that anyway. It's strange to me. There are so many avenues, not just on television, but radio, internet, things you could look at, things you could search, things you could just do around your house. I don't know why people watch things that make them angry. I would never have it on anyway.
It's not really an outlet to get angry. You know, they say if you scream a lot, it makes you feel better. Or a good cry will make you feel better. There's nothing that makes you feel better about getting angry and constantly getting angry.
No.
It has a very negative effect.
This has been an interesting show this week.
It has.
I've enjoyed it. Now, we should let people know that this show is live every Friday from 11:10 a.m. till 12 p.m. Repeats on Sunday morning from 8:10 a.m. till 9 a.m. and on Wednesday from 3:10 p.m. to 4 p.m. and can be found on the net, WWGH1071.com, under archived programs. They're all there.
And you can follow us on Facebook at Community Christian Fellowship. And I look forward to seeing you. If you want to come to church, we're at 9:30 on Sunday morning and then again at 11 o'clock.
Everybody have a great week.
God bless you guys.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. From Broadcasting Letters and Marianne Michael.
Alexander Hamilton is going off the $10 bill.